Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckless AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
All right, still coming to you live from Las Vegas, getting ready for Noche UFC, Mexican Independence Day, coming up for the Combat Sports Leader this weekend. Good to have you with us, episode 437 of the Anik and Florian podcast, presented by DraftKings, live on the DraftKings Network, also on the DraftKings YouTube channel. Clips are still there on the Anik and Florian podcast YouTube channel, where you can access, among other things, Remember the Show with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik. Good to be with you, Ken Flo. What's a good word, kid?
What's happening, kid? Have you recovered? Have you recovered from all
I'm
your
getting
travel?
There. Slowly but surely.
Gotcha.
I felt like our episode on Monday was just insane, and we were going in a number of different directions, and it actually taught me a valuable lesson in terms of how to structure our pay-per-view recap shows. I'm going to need more of your time, I think, because our producer, Cody Merrill, talking about Alexander Volkov finally crossing that threshold for him, at least in terms of the optics, looking like a world champion. And I'm not even sure if we uttered his name. Maybe I mentioned his name in passing, but Alexander Volkov had to fight through those leg kicks. He knew what he was getting in terms of just the gameness of Tai Tuivasa, right? But in a heavyweight division right now that is dominated by names like Tom Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich waiting for John Jones and Stipe Miocic to complete their business. Here's this 34-year-old who's 6'7", who's got all this gold from these other promotions, but who's an absolute beast. And on any given Saturday night, this guy could be a world champion too, at least in my mind.
Dude, that height and size is always going to be a problem. Even if you don't know how to fight, here's the problem. Volkov knows how to fight. He knows how to put it all together. And, you know, when I was looking at this fight, listen, it's tough to make calls in the heavyweight division. Tai Tuivasa is a very dangerous man. He knows how to put people to sleep. But Volkov has really come into his own, man. The confidence, the jab, the grappling, all that stuff was on full display. And the dude looked like a champion. I mean, really looked like he put it all together and dominated that fight with ease in enemy territory. So, yeah, tremendous performance, man.
Still progressing with his jiu-jitsu fundamentals. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt. He talked a lot about his grappling in the fighter meeting, so certainly had to enjoy pulling off an Ezekiel choke, right? Haven't seen it all that many times in UFC history for myriad reasons, right? But congratulations to Alexander Volkov, a guy who's headlined several times for the UFC. Really good egg, a father who spends a ton of time away from his children. And just kind of wanted to highlight him off the top of the show, in part because our fighter meeting was just so thoughtful. Here's a guy, 34 years of age, but recognizing that this is the time, right? This is the time that I need to go all in. I'm towards the end of my career, moves to Las Vegas, and reaps the benefits. You know, outstanding performance against Tai Tuivasa. And if any heavyweight can lose three consecutive fights and come back, we've seen Tai Tuivasa do it before. But Kenny, he had this long winning streak, and now Tuivasa's lost three in a row. I still believe, at around, maybe, what is he, 30 years old or so, I still believe Tai Tuivasa will fight for a world title before his UFC career is over. I really do believe that he'll have enough appetite for improvement. The cards will eventually align, and he'll find himself in an eliminator at the very least.
You could be right, man. We've seen it a lot, especially in the heavyweight division, of guys kind of having this reincarnation and turning their career around. And I think Tai Tuivasa, you know, while he didn't get the result he wanted, he had a very tough opponent. But I think movement-wise, he looked better to me. He looked like he was trying to be more technical out there, switching things up with the team, I think is going to work out well for him. So tough fight, tough setback here, but he will be back for sure.
One other question I did want to ask you about UFC 293. There are these two light heavyweight contenders under the City Kickboxing banner, Tyson Pedro, Carlos Ulbert. If they were to fight this weekend, I'm not sure what would happen, right? But it seems like inevitably their careers are going to be linked. Pedro obviously got to the UFC a lot sooner. Ulbert came off of Dana White's Contender Series. I bring it up in this context. Yep. I think most people believe that the ceiling is higher for Carlos Ulbert, who sort of happened upon this career. Right? Outstanding athlete, great rugby player, got into boxing, couldn't get boxing or kickboxing fights, gravitated towards MMA. Tyson Pedro, his father, John, ran a promotion, right? Born into this, right? I don't know if it's fair of me to ask you who has the higher ceiling, or if I just want to know how you felt about Carlos Ulbert's performance in particular, but who do you think has the higher ceiling, and what'd you think about what those two men did with the showcase in Sydney?
Ulbert looks solid, man. No question about it. I think that Tyson Pedro, I think he's going to benefit a lot over time by being affiliated with the City Kickboxing Gym. I think it's going to take him time to really learn the system. Once he does, I think he's going to be a big-time problem for everyone in that division. And I think we already saw great gains in that last fight. But, you know, he's so humble. From being there and experiencing that style and sparring all the great fighters that are over there, he's like, listen, man, he's like, I'm just getting started. He's like, I'm just here to learn. And, you know, so he seemed very humble about the experience. And I think this is a great, great fit for him. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tyson Pedro kind of makes a run at that title shot perhaps quicker than Ulbert, maybe.
Well, and Tyson Pedro is the guy who has fought the much bigger names. He's the Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, right? He's certainly the more five-tool player in all realms of MMA. But in terms of just the scary plus athlete guy, I think Carlos Ulbert might have the higher ceiling there. But I don't know. I mean, Pedro might be closer to a finished product, but maybe not, right? Like, even on my fighter notes, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing like new setups, all new fundamentals, new striking system. You know what I mean? Like, and he's had a couple camps now, and so far, pretty darn good. All right. Well, we will get to Brian Petrie in 60 seconds, but football is back in full swing. Another week of epic games coming up this weekend. And who has got you covered on the action for every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and new customers can bet $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. And of course, nobody's missing out on the action this season. All DraftKings customers, new or otherwise, can take advantage of two new offers every single game day this September. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action right now with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app and use code AFPOD to sign up. New customers can bet just $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code AFPOD. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See dkng.co/football for eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. All right, let us go three wide now and call on our outstanding mixed martial arts handicapper, Brian Petrie. Guy's a big sports fan as well. I mean, let's be honest, you know. I'm hoping that my Anik imprinted D-backs jersey somehow got lost in the mail. Please tell me that says Petrie and not Longoria on the back of your jersey.
It is. I could never wear a jersey that has my name on it. This is an Evan Longoria jersey, baby. Sent to me for free by one of the best in the world, Evan Longoria. Couldn't believe it came on Saturday or Saturday night for the fights. And I don't think I've taken it off since. So let's go, boys. It's a day.
That's badass.
So I just wanted to quickly ask you, if I could, about the new undisputed UFC middleweight champion, Sean Strickland.
Man.
And your relative degree of surprise. Not just that he's the new champ, but the nature of the fight.
Yeah, so, I mean, it shocked me. It truly did. I mean, I've been sitting here going, oh, Izzy was off. That's kind of a cop-out because Sean was on. And Izzy didn't know how to deal with Sean's style. And Sean is a guy that he does things different. I know sparring is starting to get tailed back in the sport. All he does is spar. And it showed because it looked like Izzy, to me, maybe didn't do a lot of sparring in this camp. And if not, a lot of boxing sparring. Because after he got dropped in round one, he was on his bicycle trying to counter a counter striker. And then it just wasn't there. And then he fell back. I mean, I had a 4-1 Sean Strickland shocked me to my core because Izzy's one of the best strikers in the world. He goes 5 rounds, doesn't have a mark on his face. I mean, what are we doing here? It was crazy. I'm happy for Sean Strickland. You know, that's Chris Curtis's guy. I saw Chris Curtis's reaction. I know it means a lot to him. Him and Chris Curtis have been tight since Chris was out in Temecula, California with Dan Henderson and those guys. So yeah, that's cool that you're seeing the hard work pays off. And Sean's an interesting dude, but I want to see him fight everyone at 85 now. Now he's a champ.
Right.
Not an easy get out. You know, people thought when Pereira knocked him out, oh, that's he. You know, no, this guy's tough. He's a tough out. His only other loss is Cannonier, which a lot of people think he won. Give me Dreykus Duplessis for Sean Strickland next year. You know what I mean? I love that fight, you know?
Well, let's see what happens on December 16th, right? Yeah. To my knowledge, the UFC still needs a pay-per-view headliner in December. And while I would advise Sean Strickland, if I were his manager, to sit on the throne for a little bit, at least let the calendar turn and not Jessica Andrade this thing and turn it around and go to China to fight Zhang Weili.
Right.
But I really do believe that Sean Strickland is the type of champion that if they need him to fight in December, you know, he's absolutely going to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some selections for Noche UFC. I'm trying to time this out to give you a moment with your fellow Cincinnati guy, the UFC Hall of Famer, Rich Franklin, on the back end. So
that's
be
awesome.
Mindful of the chat here, boys. We don't want to keep the UFC Hall of Famer waiting, especially if your story's off the air or any indication. I don't want to piss that guy off. I auditioned calling fights with him, he was one of the guys they had me call fights with to see if we would be a broadcast team. I didn't want to piss him off then. Ken Flo, I do. So Team Florian goes 4-3 at UFC 293. But Kenny, there is a but. -$915. You lost $600 on Adesanya. Of course, the 3-unit on Jack Jenkins.
I had 3 units on Jenkins and 2 on Ulberg.
Yeah, I know you had 2 on Ulberg, buddy.
I thought you said I had units on Adesanya. But yeah, loss on Adesanya killed us both, Petrie.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
So Team Petrie, 5-3, you had the extra hit on Charles Radke, -$205. So the lead for Petrie is swelling, though, $2,265. And there is a new rule for the main event challenge. And again, we are revamping things for 2024, fellas.
Fantastic.
We need to figure out a way for your bankroll to more accurately reflect your sharpness, right? But basically, the new rule for the rest of the year is that you can abstain from any fight you want.
Oh, okay.
Now, for Petrie, that's a little bit of an advantage because he has this big lead. You still have to give our DraftKings audience your predictions, right? But if you don't want to lay -1200 with a betting favorite to win $100, you're not going to have to do that anymore. Fair?
Fair.
All right.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, UFC Noche. That's going to be fun to say. I still don't know as I talk to you guys if I'm opening this show. This is UFC Noche, or if it's UFC Fight Night. Grasso versus Shevchenko 2. I'm certainly as fuck hoping it's UFC Noche. Good fight here, Bri. Tracy Cortez, minus 112. Jasmine Jazz Divizius, minus 108. Cortez 4-0 in the UFC, but she has not fought since a win over Melissa Gatto at UFC 274. That was all the way back in May of 2022. As you may remember, had a fight with Amanda Ribas, go away shortly after she had weighed in. That was back in December. Now she returns against the streaking 34-year-old Jazz Divizius. Brian Petrie, who do you have?
Well, I'm glad you said it, John, because I was going to be the pronunciation of the week, and I would have nailed it.
And you know why I killed it. You know why I killed POW? Because I'm trying to time out you and your boy Rich Franklin.
Oh, okay. I would have nailed it, though. I did it in my head all day. Anyway, back to the fight. This is a really good fight. Jasmine is, you know, I root for Canadian fighters. Canadians have some of the best fans, most loyal fans. If you go on MMA Twitter, most of those sharps and stuff are from Canada, right? So I root for them to have a fighter. And Jasmine could be that one. She could be that one. She's very good. Tracy Cortez is a good grappler. She's mixing up her training really well. I feel like, you know, sometimes though, Tracy Cortez, when she fought Melissa Gatto, she got taken down three times, threw up a couple submissions, looked pretty good, looked aggressive. She's tough in there. She's pretty, maybe unassuming. Maybe people don't think she's tough because she is beautiful. She is tough. She can get down and grimy. But Jasmine, I think, is just a little too big and a little too sturdy. She lands really good takedowns too. I think her stand-up is better. The line is set where I would have it set, and I wish I was getting a little bit of more plus money or any plus money on Jasmine. So I'm going to take Jasmine here, and whatever the over is, hammer the over 2.5. It's going to be -4, whatever, put everything on it. These girls are grapplers. They're not going to finish each other. They're both very durable. They both want to win. They both have a lot of stakes, a lot of hype. Go the over. Give me Jasmine.
Jasmine Jazz Divizius right now -108. And I kind of like the way you set that up in terms of rooting for there to be an athlete from Canada that emerges, because Ken Flo spent a lot of time training north of the border there at TriStar, right, Kenny? And at least right now, Jasmine Jazz Divizius is on the short list of fighters that can actually realize a title fight for Canada. So your thoughts on how she handles the appreciable challenge that is Tracy Cortez this week?
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, I think that for Jasmine, she matches up well in that Cortez, you know, has good takedowns. You know, I think her takedowns and wrestling control, kind of the best part of what she does. Can she do that against someone who is big for the division and strong and a grappler in her own right? And Jasmine, I just don't think so. I think it's a really tough style matchup for her. Cortez, I'm talking about. I do think she's made big improvements. I think they both have, but I think Jasmine is probably the better striker. And again, a lot of times we see these grapplers kind of cancel each other out on the feet, ends up being a stand-up fight. And I think that's where Jasmine really can take advantage and win that fight. So I'd like to pick Jasmine. I like to put two units on Jasmine as well.
Ken Flo coming out swinging.
Yeah. And then she was on the Schmo. She was like, she got interviewed by the Schmo, and she said that her name is technically pronounced Yesadovichis or something like Yesadovichis or something. Whoa. I was like, geez, sir, well, I don't know. Anyways, you guys have a very difficult job over there at the UFC pronouncing all those names.
Well, Lena Landsberg, the Swedish fighter, no longer in the UFC. I think she might have retired. Her name's pronounced Lena Lansbury. Okay, so
right.
I mean, it's there's a lot to that, but you're not wrong, Kenny. Okay. All right, both of the guys like Jasmine Jazz Divizius is how she says it on my phone, and how you will as such hear it on broadcast. All right, at lightweight, Mexico City's Golden Boy Daniel Zellhuber, modest 238, taking on Christos Yagos, who is plus 195. Little setup for you boys, and then we'll have BP lead us off. Zellhuber 2-0 in the UFC after an April win over Lando Venata. Yagos, the far more experienced party here than the 13-1 Zellhuber. Yagos 20-10 as a pro, multiple UFC stints maybe even, but he started his UFC career against Gilbert Burns in 2014 at UFC 179. A lot of big names on his resume, too, even in losses, right? Strength of schedule, outstanding across 12 UFC starts and coming off a big knockout win over Ricky Glenn back in April of this year. Brian Petrie, who do you have in this one, Zellhuber or Yagos?
I mean, I know his UFC noche, and I know there's a lot of Mexican fighters on this card, but am I getting punked? Are they like messing with me, the bookmakers at this point? Because Zellhuber looked good in the contender series, laid a dud in his debut, lost, and looked okay as time out, but he didn't look like this young stud that we were promised. This guy that will knock you out, who's electric, and he could get there. Don't get me wrong, he could get there. But Yagos is sturdy. This guy's tough to put away. You can get him on the ground. You can submit him. He gives his back a lot, and he gives up his neck a lot. But on the feet, this guy is sturdy. He's powerful. I've followed his social medias. It seems like he wants it now. He's starting to get a little momentum. He's starting to find himself a little bit and find his confidence. And plus 195? Huh? Yeah, man. Give me Christos Yagos, because that's dog money just ready to be in my pocket.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you went that direction. And Daniel Zellhuber, 1-1 in the UFC, by the way. I stand corrected. I was very tired when I prepped for this podcast. Kenny, Zellhuber minus 238 right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Yagos plus 195. Which way you go?
Yeah, this one's interesting. I'm not sure what the bookmakers are doing here. I think if it was even money, I would go with Zellhuber. I think that he's got a lot of potential, as Brian was talking about. I think he's a good striker, maybe a little bit more technical than Yagos, but I think Christos is going to be powerful on the feet. I think Zellhuber, it's one thing to have good offensive skills, but he does get hit, and he hasn't faced the high level of competition that Yagos has. And I think that's where he can make some mistakes, and maybe we're underestimating him, and maybe he's further along than we thought. But I think at this stage of the game, there's just way too much value for Christos. So I think that he has the capability of winning this on the feet or on the ground, most likely by decision. But as Brian said, I had the opportunity to talk to Christos not too long ago at one of the PFL events, and he said he's trained his ass off. He's been loving the training down in South Florida. He's feeling great, ready to rock. So I like Yagos as well.
Yeah, he just seems to be in a really good place. I look forward to meeting Zellhuber at the fighter meetings here in the not-too-distant future. All right, feature bout at bantamweight, El Nino Problema, Raul Rosas Jr., minus 540 now on DraftKings, Bri. Terrence Mitchell's plus 360. All right, so let us see how Rosas Jr. handles his first pro MMA loss. Came at the hands of Christian Rodriguez in Miami at UFC 287 back in April. This line has steadily been climbing. Mitchell making a quick turn here after he was knocked out in his UFC debut against Cameron Simon. That was at UFC 290 back in July. What do you think, BP? New rules in the main event challenge. You laying minus 540 or what?
So I love the new rules, because if I would accept the new rules or do it, I want my guy Ken Flo to come back. I want it to be, you know, fourth quarter come December. So I will pick a fight. I will lay the chalk on Rosas Jr. because I don't believe in Terrence Mitchell. I don't. Sometimes there are numbers where you're like, this guy can get it done at this number. Like Sean Strickland was a huge number. Didn't shock me in the least bit that he won this. But Terrence Mitchell took some years off. Is a one-round fighter. Came out guns blazing against Cameron Simon. Didn't even take a breath. Was gassed out. Rojas Jr., I feel like maybe was humbled a little bit, but he is still a good grappler. He still is going to use that to grapple Terrence Mitchell, who is a longer striker, but has tended to grapple his last couple times outside the UFC as well. He likes when the fight hits the floor. I think Rojas Jr. is that's where he wants to be. He's good to get on top. He has the better cardio. And I think he's going to rebound here. I think he should. He's still young, so it's really hard for me to really kind of like knock on the kid. But I would like for him to come out here and get a finish is what I'm trying to say. After his last performance, let's come out and get a finish. If not, I think he's going to dominate 30-27. Give me Rojas Jr. And I'll lay the chalk. I'll lay the heavy chalk.
Yeah, Kenny, a lot of people have bet this number, right? And it's telling when a guy moves from -445 to -540 and people still find value there in parlays or otherwise. Some suggesting this a custom-made matchup for the youngster Raul Rosas Jr. How do you handicap things against Terrence Mitchell?
Yeah, John, I think that's what it is, really. I think that Terrence Mitchell is very tall and lanky for that division. Was he like 5'10", 135 pounds? That's tough to deal with. However, if you're a dude who wants to look for those legs and get a leg entry and put someone on the ground, it could be a disadvantage as well. And I think while Rosas is probably going to be outgunned on the feet, for the most part, I don't think he's going to try to keep it there. I think he tries to put Mitchell on the ground, and from there, it's going to be over shortly thereafter. So give me Rosas Jr. as well.
All right. We have arrived at the co-main event, and I'm going to go right back to Ken Flo on this one. This is pretty interesting when I send you guys the lines and it totally flips. I sent you guys these when I was in Sydney. Kevin Holland was the betting favorite. He's no longer the favorite. Jack Della Maddalena -135. Kevin Holland +114. 20th UFC appearance for my good friend Kevin Holland. Just had a resounding win over Michael Chiesa in Salt Lake City July 29th. Now he faces Jack Della, for whom, Kenny, it has been an interesting summer. Escaped with a split decision against Basil Hafez July 15th. And now the 27-year-old out of Perth right back to Vegas to take on Kevin Holland. Your thoughts?
Oh, man, this is such a tricky one for me because JDM is coming off the worst performance of his career. I was super high on him. I think when he's getting things going, he's not forcing a knockout. He looks tremendous when he's just slipping and ripping and keeping that body moving, that head moving. He's, you know, trying to organically look to take you out. He didn't seem that way in his last fight. And on the ground, I don't know. He didn't look so great either. But and then you have Kevin Holland, who has been surprising me left and right. And I guess over the course of his career in the UFC, he's been a tough guy for me to get right. However, right now, this Kevin Holland, to me, has a lot of consistency. It seems like he's highly motivated. He's tall. He's lanky. He's improved a great deal on the feet. He knows how to put it together. He's been wrestling his ass off. He looks way better in that domain as well. And I think he's got way too much momentum at this stage of the game. And I like Kevin Holland here in this fight. So, I'm willing to put three units on that one as well. So, tres unidades para Kevin Holland, por favor.
I love the way you laid that out, and it's all truth, right? Mm-hmm. As someone who has sat down with the man, like, you're speaking truth, Ken Flo, in terms of his commitment. I find it very interesting, Bri, that promotionally they want him at 70, and yet he still wants to go to 85. It's like, dude, you win a world title at 170 pounds if you're not careful. Makes the weight reluctantly, begrudgingly, because he likes to eat. But I do find it interesting that he was favored and now he's not. How do you handicap the co-main event at Noche UFC?
Man, no disrespect to the real main event, because that's an amazing fight too. This is my main event. I've been behind three name Jack from day one. This dude impresses me. The one thing I'm not going to brag about myself, but the one thing I credit myself to is I feel like I have an eye for talent when it comes to some fighters. I dug up receipts with some of my boys about Sugar being the champion. I dug up receipts of Ian Gary breaking the top 10 where they all hate the new guys, right? I'm going to dig up some receipts on JDM here. I love that Kenny went Kevin Holland here because we've been aligned the whole time. I think JDM's boxing is phenomenal. I think people are taking a little too much into that last fight where it wasn't a great performance. He looked sloppy. His fight IQ was bad. He kept jumping for guillotines and he kept doing weird stuff when he could have finished the fight. But his hands are lethal. His boxing's great. Kevin Holland's a phenomenal fighter. I agree with you. I think he could win a title at 170 pounds. I think 170 pound Kevin Holland is a different Kevin Holland than 183 pounds what he used to weigh in at 85. I think this fight is going to be bananas. I think Kevin Holland, besides Stephen Thompson, not many people have outstruck him on the feet. You know, he knocked out Ponzinibbio, he knocked out Joaquin Buckley. JDM's got a tall task here. And Kenny's out here swaying me to go Kevin Holland, but I'm going opposite. Kenny went 3 units on Kevin Holland. I'm going to go 4 unis. Woo! On 3 named Jack. Let's have a ball game here, babe. Let's have a ball game here.
Let's go.
4 units on 3 named Jack Della Maddalena. And of course, our great producer says his main event is anything featuring Roman Coppola.
Yeah,
God love you, Cody. Cody, you get a 1-year extension. All right, main event for the Undisputed UFC Women's Flyweight Championship. Brian Petrie will lead us off. Valentina Shevchenko, -185. Alexa Grasso, +154.
Yeah.
Grasso, +600. The underdog back in March at UFC 285 shocked the world. Submitted Shevchenko to win the title. Came by 4th round face crank.
Mm-hmm.
Now Shevchenko, who had 7 times successfully defended the title before meeting her match, will try to exact some revenge, Bri. Yeah. I share your enthusiasm for Jack Della Maddalena and Kevin Holland, but I am absolutely dying to know which way you guys fall on this main event. So without further delay, Brian Petrie. And still and new, which way are we going?
Yeah, listen, Valentina is kind of the easy pick. I see a lot of people because they're like, oh, she wasn't herself. She was burned out. I like Alexa Grasso. I've liked Alexa Grasso for a while. She's tough. She's not afraid of Valentina at all. And when they clinched and when they hit the ground, Valentina usually is the stronger fighter there for most of her fights. That didn't phase out Alexa Grasso at all. You know, that was, I don't know if Alexa Grasso is stronger than her or not, but that didn't phase her at all. And I think, you know, everyone's like, well, Valentina made one mistake. That's all it takes in this game. I think Alexa Grasso, they say you're Teddy Atlas quote, you're 30% better as a champion. I agree with that. I think Alexa Grasso is training like a champion. She's probably brought people in to really perfect this. She's already had one camp with Valentina. She's got another one. I think Valentina is absolutely a phenomenal fighter. The GOAT, you can throw her in there. But listen, I'm looking at the signs here, okay? Izzy lost, Drake bet him, and I love EA Sports, but he's on the cover of EA. Valentina is also on the cover of EA. Alexa Grasso, who I'm a big fan of, plus money. I'm addicted to plus money. Give me Alexa Grasso. And still, baby.
How about that? Alexa Grasso, +154 right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Ken Flo, rematch for the Undisputed UFC Women's Flyweight Championship. We got Rich Ace Franklin waiting in the hole, but I will give you 60 seconds or longer if you need it to make your prediction. Who wins the main event at Noche UFC?
Yeah, very interesting. I'm a big fan of both of these ladies. They have a lot of firepower, a lot of offensive capabilities. I think it kind of comes down to who's going to be more disciplined and who's going to make the proper adjustments based off of that last rematch. Now, it's very rare that you see Shevchenko at what, -180 something or other?
Yeah.
I see value there. Well, -185. Alexa Grasso, of course, there's plus money there. But when I look at Shevchenko and all the skills that she has and all the experience, you got to believe she's going to come back stronger, more skilled and smarter. Don't throw any spinning attacks, will you? Give me a heart attack. I'm going with Shevchenko here, -185. I see some value there. Let's go, BP.
Nice.
Just one unit on Valentina Shevchenko. Is that right, Ken Flo?
No. I put the rest on Holland. So I had 2.
Oh, yeah. You don't have
that. He ran out.
He did. He ran out. All right. I'm trying to bend the rules of my guy. Make it competitive. All right. I want to go 4 wide right now and bring into the conversation UFC Hall of Famer, former middleweight champion. Oh, look how good the lettuce looks today, too. One FC vice president. It's good to see you, brother. How are you?
What's going on? Been a long time, man.
It has been a long time. Your hair looks fucking glorious.
This is just an experiment, just so you know. So it's this is not normal for me, as you know. Yeah.
Well, always the handsomest man in the room, and I say that with respect to my co-host, Rich Franklin, that guy. So Brian Petrie, our handicapper, has a quick story he wants to share with you. He's a big fan, and then we're going to let him get out of here. So, Bri, the floor is yours.
So, Rich, I'm a Cincinnati guy. Don't mind the D-backs jersey. I also graduated a little school called Oak Hills High School,
Wow. Wow. What year was that?
I graduated 05.
Okay.
So I didn't have you. You taught the smarter kids in math. But there was a situation in your hallway where two kids were fighting. And this is the first time I saw you.
I remember this.
Beefcaked out of your mind. And you walk over and you go, bink, bink. You guys done? And I went, I want to be that fucking guy right there. Because these kids are like, you know, like I was a freshman. They were seniors. I'm like, oh, they're about to fight. You come out like, nope, not going to happen. Bink. And it was the coolest thing I ever seen when I was a freshman. I know Todd Carnes a little bit. I've been at Saquon a few times, trained at Vision with Rod Housley and all those guys. So yeah, I met you a few times, like in passing, but I wanted to share that story with you.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I can remember that fight broke out. It was right in front of my hallway, and I was like, I looked at these two kids. I'm like, of all the teachers that you can get in a fight in front of, you chose my room. I literally threw each of these kids on my shoulder and just walked down the hallway with them and started heading towards the. I remember there was a big crowd outside, you know how school fights are. So it was like, and everybody separated. Like they didn't even try to keep me out of the fight because they were like, let's see what Mr. Franklin does here. And then I just picked these kids up and started walking away, and the whole crowd just hushed like, well, that was an anticlimactic ending. So that was funny.
Well, I'm happy to get that legendary story on the airwaves. Bri, thank you, brother.
Yeah, thank
we'll
you.
See you next week. All right.
See you, boys. See you, Rich. Nice to meet you.
Take care.
All right. Well, we are privileged to have a few minutes here, of course, with the UFC Hall of Famer and now 1FC Vice President Rich Franklin. So I guess I have to ask, though, real quick before we get into some other things, as the former undisputed UFC middleweight champion, I don't know if you saw what Sean Strickland did or read about it, but do you have any idea about this changing of the title in your division?
Dude, I saw that punch land and in the first round there, and it was a beautiful punch, threw it straight down the pipe and couldn't get any cleaner than that, slipped off that. But then Adesanya come back in round two and, you know, put on a great fight. What a great fight.
Just insane. So it's interesting for me after calling that fight to then sort of on my way back from Sydney, go through your whole career retrospective and on your Wikipedia page and everything else. So I will get into some of that other stuff, but I want to lead with the 1FC stuff because, you know, it's crazy to think that it's been almost 10 years since you made this decision that sort of made a lot of MMA headlines. You know, for a time I thought you might end up being my broadcast partner, but in 2014, you take this executive role with 1FC, and have you been in Asia essentially full time ever since?
Oh, no. Actually, right now I'm in New York. And so initially I worked for the company from Cincinnati and I was commuting, which is, you know, not your average commute to work. For me, door to door, from my front door to my hotel, anytime I fly to Southeast Asia is 33 hours. And then I moved down to Singapore, was there full time 5 years. I obviously came back and visited home and whatnot. Never got rid of my place in Cincinnati. And now I've moved back to Cincinnati mid 2021, June of 2021, because we're starting to make our push into the US at this point in time. Had our first show back in May this year in Denver, planning on doing 4 events next year in 2024. And so I'm stateside and I'm doing, oddly enough, like I never intended to do any kind of commentary necessarily. And I've done so many different things for this company because I kind of straddle the line. It's really weird. Like I'm kind of half talent and half executive.
Right.
And so I've kind of played that like slot back position where they just throw me in whatever offense is necessary and whatever position I need to be in at times. And I've done a lot of different things for this company, but currently I'm doing a lot of the work with the commissions, the state commissions here in the US, because obviously anybody that's familiar with ONE Championship knows we use a different rule set than the unified rule set. And so working with the commissions on getting the codes and sanctioning in each of the states.
Rich, how has that role changed for you? And I guess what I mean is, how do you see fighting differently now that you've kind of had those roles for 1FC?
Oh, it's, you know, it's way different. I see it so much differently now. I mean, first of all, I just take a step back from this question for a second and say, when you and I were fighting Kenny, especially me, particularly like the way that the UFC used me, I didn't have to create any kind of character, whether the character was true to who I was or not. You know, like at the time I was the boy next door high school teacher, and that's exactly what the UFC needed. And, you know, I spent time doing a ton of marketing for them, preaching the good gospel of MMA all over the United States, and then opened up several international markets. And that in itself separated me from the crowd. We didn't have social media at the time. Like, that kind of came on at the tail end of our careers. And so it's much different. But now, being on the executive side of things, like, I understand. I didn't understand it at the time when I was competing, although I just naturally did it, is that when I was asked to do an interview or you know, show up at an appearance or something like that, I did most of those things. And I knew that it had value. But I didn't really understand the gravity of those choices, because that is what ended up not just that, but that's what established my brand along with performing inside of the cage. Right now, as an executive, I see athletes that don't jump on these opportunities sometimes when you're like, hey, do you want to do this interview or that interview, or you want to make this post on social media? It's like, now you have to have these other things to set you apart from everybody else, because there's so much noise with social media now. You know, keep in mind, like, if the UFC had an event in March 1 year and I was the headliner for June, my name was all you heard from March to June, right? And right. So that's, but now there's so much going on. There's so much noise on social media, so many things that can distract you, that it's like, you need to figure out a way to make yourself stand out. And a lot of these athletes, they don't get that. Like, talent obviously is a key component of succeeding in any kind of, you know, sports arena. But at the same time, like, man, you really know how to, you need to know how to separate yourself.
That's very true, man. And I guess my next question is, like, you know, seeing where we came from, where the UFC was at back then to where it is now and all the other promotions that are in the space right now, are you surprised or did you expect this kind of explosion of mixed martial arts all over the world?
No, I mean, I've been surprised at every level. I can remember actually after I won my title, and then I was the coach on The Ultimate Fighter in the second season there. And I can remember Dana saying to me, like, are you ready for your life to be turned upside down? And I was like, whatever. I'm like, this is a niche sport. Like, I thought that in my head. And it was very niche at the time, but it was that season one, season two, where things like that cuss, it really turned. And I can remember being in my hometown doing an interview on a local sports station and talking to the host about how I enjoyed travel because I get to go be a celebrity in Las Vegas, but I get to come home and I'm just normal. And then it wasn't probably 2 or 3 weeks after that, like, things really significantly changed for me. I could tell, like, when I was on TV, when there was advertising for one of my fights or something, because, like, I could no longer go to the mall and, you know, shop or any of that kind of stuff. I couldn't, like, you know, go to like a little festival and, you know, throw a balloon or throw a dart at a balloon to win a stuffed animal. Like, that crap ended. Right. And so, you know, and then obviously, you know, I'm 10 years out of it now, like, since my last, more than 10 years since my last fight. So when I get recognized now, I just say to people, like, man, like, you're a true fan. I've gotten older. I got a few more wrinkles. Yeah. I even have long hair at this point in time. Who knows what this crap is coming out right. of my hair? And, like, if you can recognize me at this point, it's like you really followed my career.
Yeah.
Well, since you are part-time on-air talent, just a strong lean or push to keep the lettuce, at least for now. I think it's a good look for you, although you are disguising it a little bit with a hat. UFC Hall of Famer, 1FC's Rich Franklin with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. And I will say, it's so funny. Like, I will never put on a pink-brown suit combination without thinking of you.
I appreciate
American
that.
Fighter shorts, and that color combination is always Rich Franklin for me. But gosh, you're just peeling my brain in so many different directions in terms of the breakneck nature of the UFC schedule. Because I remember even when Stipe Miocic won the belt 7 years ago, we had a dark week the next week, just 1 week off. And I remember thinking, man, that's good for Stipe. We're not live this weekend and there's not another live event. Your next fight night is One Fight Night 14 coming up later this month. It features Stamp Fairtex. And I was driven to watch this Stamp dance video today. Like, I'm trying to prep Rich Franklin, and now I'm watching the Stamp dance video over and over again. I don't know exactly what I'm watching, but I'll admit to being compelled. And obviously, she's got a big fight against a familiar name coming up here short.
Yeah, you know, Stamp, I don't know if you guys know the history there, but I was at one point in time for one championship running a program called the One Warrior Series, which was I was a traveling show and I found talent. It was great, like, best job I've ever had. I literally ran a production team. I got to travel around and we'd say, all right, where do you guys want to go? Let's recruit some talent. We need some people from Thailand or we need some people from Australia. And we would just go there and then we would create storylines and create this TV show that aired on the other side of the planet. And Stamp was from one of the first tryouts that I held in Bangkok. And I tell the story frequently. I was watching this tryout and it sounded like this cannon was going off to my right, and there's two people in front of me trying out. And I just remember hearing this, and I suddenly looked over and I see this young lady. I mean, she's tiny. I mean, she's not a big woman. And I suddenly, I'm not even paying attention to the tryout that's going on this way. I'm just watching her. And immediately it was like, I need to sign this girl. Like, I need to sign this woman right now. And so probably one of the few and only people that came on my show that I jumped through a lot of hoops to get her to come into one championship. And fortunately, I signed her to my organization, which the Warrior Series, after we recruited our athletes, we had smaller shows, which was kind of a, call it a feeder league for one championship. And the moment that she fought one championship, I was like, yeah, we're going to take her right now. And so they just pulled her away from me immediately. And then obviously, you know, the rest is history there. Stamp went on to win, you know, she became the Muay Thai queen for a while, kickboxing queen. And now with Angela Lee vacating the title at the atomweight division, there was an entire Grand Prix that they ran. Stamp was actually part of that Grand Prix. Hamseo He, who is her opponent for this one fight night 14 coming up, was my dark horse pick. She ended up getting injured and couldn't complete the tournament, but she was my dark horse pick to actually win the tournament. So I'm excited to actually see this fight come back around. And I think stylistically, these two women match up really well because Stamp likes to come forward. She's going to catch kicks and counter off those kicks. She buries her head down, throws hands, and she's, you know, obviously very aggressive, but Hamseo He, she's the kind of fighter that doesn't take a step back either, and she doesn't kick very often. So it's going to be interesting to see how these two end up throwing down.
Well, and it's interesting for me to hear you talk about navigating your role as executive and on-air commentator, because what ends up happening, right, you have interpersonal relationships on both sides of this fight. Now, you're calling this fight on Prime Video September 29th. Is that correct or no?
Yeah, I will be there. I'll be part of the three-man booth. It'll be me along with Ray Flores and Mitch Chilson.
All right, you can see it broadcast live in the U.S. primetime Friday, September 29th on Prime Video. Because in hearing you talk about Stamp Fairtex, I'm thinking, man, how's he going to call the fight? But then you hear about your connection to Sohee Hom, or Hom Sohee. See, in the UFC, we called her Sohee Hom.
Yeah, you know, despite the connection, at the end of the day, like, what really the role I play on the commentary team is an analyst. And so you're only as good as your analysis, right? I mean, so I look at a fight and I say, all right, if I'm coaching Stamp, what is going to be my game plan or my strategy against Hamseo He? And then vice versa, if I'm coaching Hamseo He, what is my strategy? And that's kind of like, I basically do an analysis breakdown, you know, before. So I typically list out the keys to victory for each of the athletes coming out, a couple keys to victory that I see that might be either pertinent or more important than others, and then move on from there. And then once we get into the match, you just call on the action of what you see is like, well, you know, she needs to do this if she wants to improve her performance here, or vice versa. I mean, I don't know why I'm schooling you guys, because you guys are both Kenny Florian is one of the best analysts in the business, man. No joke, man. Kenny, I do love your breakdowns, by the way.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
No, Kenny's the man. And there are a lot of reasons to tune in on September 29th, perhaps chief among them to find out if Rich Ace Franklin cuts his hair before the broadcast. Hey, real quick. So you win the UFC middleweight title against Evan Tanner 2005. So many big wins followed. The knockout of Jason McDonald in Columbus, the Chuck Liddell knockout, the two wins over Vanderlei Silva. So if you're putting one singular career moment on TV to show like a nephew or a prospective woman, I don't know if this answer changes based upon who's watching this video, but let's say it's a prospective woman. I mean, what fight are we putting on, Rich?
Well, I'll tell you what, I always think of this question in two different ways. I'm going to say this, like, there are two fights that always come to mind for me. Number one is the second Vanderlei Silva fight, because I was dropped in that second round, literally had no clue where I was for two rounds. Like, I remember telling my corners between the fourth and fifth round, like, guys, I'm back. Like, I can remember hearing the instructions, and it's like, you know, showing what, like, how you can come through that kind of adversity is important to me. But even more so than that, probably my Travis Luter fight, not one that I would show people, because this is what I would consider my worst winning performance, because we prepped for Travis Luter and Matt Hume was coaching me at the time on this fight, and he broke Travis down, gave the game plan, set the drills up. We had him figured out to a T. I just did not execute that night and got in the worst possible position I could be in. Basically, when we were in camp, Matt was like, look, we did all these different drills, and it was like, if you get mounted, he's like, we're done. Like, the fight's over. Don't get mounted. And so I get mounted in this fight. And I mentally broke. I was like, oh my gosh, I've lost. And then I just had this like moment where I snapped back and I'm like, hey, man, no. And so I did that hitchhiker escape and got out. And then after that, like, I was just looking for, I think that was the largest knockout bonus, at least to date at that time, that Dana had ever given away. So, man, I was swinging for the fences for this thing. And it just overall, like I watched that and it's like, it's not my best performance. Like I watched myself and I'm like, man, I do not look like a good fighter. But that fight taught me a lot about myself. So it depends on my you know, what my purpose is for showing this fight.
Yeah.
If it's to impress a lady, then I'm right. probably going to go. If it's to impress a lady, I'm probably just going to go with Corey. Like, that's a clean one. Yeah. Nice and easy. Like, I look great, you know. You know, so no adversity. Like, you're just like, yeah, you know, it was always that easy type
you're
of
right.
thing. Yeah, no.
Sometimes as a journalist or podcast host, you're trying to think of a creative way to ask a question that you know the subject has been asked before, and that's what we ended up with. Rich Ace Franklin, the absolute legend. We wish you the best of luck with your next live event. It is 1FC September 29th, and you can see it on Prime Video right here in the U.S. Hey, maybe we'll do this again sometime, and keep the hair, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
I can't promise I'll keep the hair, but I'll say this. I was definitely excited to talk to you guys, man, because I haven't talked to either one of you guys in a minute, so it's been real fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, man.
Thank
Don't
you,
be
Rich.
A stranger,
You're the man.
You sound
Appreciate
great.
You guys.
Thank you, man. Rich Ace Franklin with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. What a good dude. You know, the Hall of Fame call for him came in 2019. And sometimes you wonder what that is like for a guy. And he wasn't able to be with us there, unfortunately, in Las Vegas, you know. But sometimes I think these guys, and certainly for Jens Pulver, sitting around wondering if that call is ever going to come in. And damn right it came in. But just a real cool dude, and obviously has his finger on the pulse of the sport in more ways than one.
Absolutely, man. And he's one of those guys that, again, like he said, he was just the regular dude, the dude yeah. next door who also happened to fight. He was a math teacher and, man, accomplished so many big things in the sport and always remained the same throughout the fame, the world championships. You know, he's the exact same dude, which is great to see. So congrats to Rich on everything.
Now, for you, sorry, there was a little technical delay there. For you, I swear I wasn't cutting them off. All right, guys.
No.
We have Longo's Minute Men, and then we have these Florian people that. So, in terms of getting recognized in public, right? I mean, you deal with BattleBots people, right? But like for you, it's like you were when you were competing for world titles, you were also on television, which was not at all his reality. I'm not talking about the Ultimate Fighter. I'm talking about MMA Live calling fights, right? Like you were calling George St. Pierre pay per views at UFC 83 right before. Yeah. You fought for the title. So I guess for you, it's probably cool when people come up to you and actually reference your fight career because it happened so fucking long ago at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, back in the 1960s. Yeah, no, I have similar sentiments to what Rich Franklin said. It's like, dude, if you know who I am, you've been following this sport for a very long time. So, yeah, it's funny, man.
All right. Well, thanks to Jen Wank, and thanks to Rich Franklin for hopping on with us here today. Thanks to Brian Petrie and Rich and our executive producer, Cody Merrill. Thanks to every last one of you. I say this all the time, but we just appreciate the support of the show so much so. And if you want to go to worldmmaawards.com and continue that support, vote for us to take that category, Best MMA Programming. We'd appreciate that very much. We are back with you on Monday. We will recap Noche UFC. And we'll find out if it's Valentina Shevchenko or Alexa Grasso as the undisputed UFC Women's Flyweight Champion. Check out AnakinFlorianPodcast.com to see what's going on with the show. Major things coming on the merchandise front in the next few weeks, so tune in for that as well. KennyFlorianMartialArts.com. Actually, Ken Flo did a fucking new video for his YouTube channel for the first time in, like, fucking ever. So KennyFlorianMartialArts.com. Check out his YouTube channel, Argus Integrated Defense. And we'll talk to you next Monday. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Have a great week. Go there. Yeah. Ha. Are you sure we're not in the Boston Garden? Yeah. Now every time I start a verse, I break at least three commandments. Kinda like Pluto because I never plan it. I'm outlandish in the way they make Apaches look like they own ranches. It's the art of war. Your blood's the only color on the canvas. And I don't mean it like a thug sense of how you can get God. Fuck being gangsta, I'm hip-hop. Got it every time you walk in the label, the A&R's like not it. Immune to your shit, cause I circle, dot, dotted. Body heat is a toxic, we got a beat, I don't got it. Speak cop and see, start to think psychically, make the speakers speak elitistly. Off the high horse, make an ass of the use. Your DJ must not know the alphabet, forgetting his cues. My favorite DJ got those and six extra L's to abuse. Esoteric John P, and I'm the new kid at school. I'm Radar Ellis, nice to meet you, short bust of my styles. Egocentric, ego tripping with frequent fly smiles. DJ wants to get in the bird, he gets in the bird. And Bird takes the shot, he's. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family.
And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.